All right.
All
So how are
right.
you doing, Walsh? Welcome to the Nerdy Ninja Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Taylor. It's great to be here. Great to see you again, or really hear you. People are going to just hear you know, but I get to see your beautiful face.
Good deal. Did I ever tell you about the first podcast I was ever a guest star on?
No, I would love to hear the story.
So for BYU Sports Nation, when they found out I competed on Ninja Warrior, they told me, "Hey, we'd love to have you on the show. It'll be just an internet podcast, won't be filmed. Show up, find out it's a live TV broadcast on international TV."
There's some fine print for you.
Exactly. They're like, "Here, go sign this real quick," and stuff me back into some producing booth, and I'm like, wow, glad I showered today and put on clothes. Like, it was
While in college, that is a feat. That is a
yep,
feat.
exactly.
It's, I mean, if it makes you feel better, my podcast like guest star record has been pretty much zero. This is my first time guest starring because every time I like
Hey.
plan one out, it falls apart. Like literally, I had one lined up, and the guy was like, "Hey, I got a new job, and I've decided it's time to end the podcast." It was like a few weeks. I was like a few weeks away from my slot, and I was like,
That your
"Oh man,
brother?
what's that?"
Was that your brother?
No,
Oh,
another guy.
okay.
I get people on my podcast, but I have not been able to get on other people. You're the first other person to put me on their podcast,
Good deal.
so
Well,
I'm
welcome.
excited.
Well, got a couple questions here for you.
Awesome. Let's roll through them. Let's talk about some Ninja Warrior.
Good deal. Well, when did you first become interested in American Ninja Warrior?
Ooh, that was, I mean, like you, I'm kind of one of the OGs, I guess. I don't know if I can call myself that, but like, yeah, I watched like G4 with all the video game stuff and Nerd News when I was growing up. So they had all those random Japanese shows, and Ninja Warrior was like the coolest one. So I would watch the Japanese version when I was growing up in like the 2000s, and then like 09 or 2010 or something when they came out with American Ninja Warrior, I'm like, oh, we can compete on this now. It's not just, you know, across the, you still had to say if you won the qualifying, you used to still have to go there, but like you got to qualify in America. So I've been watching the show since the beginning, and I get hooked on it, especially on like the different personalities you see, you know, like Flip Rodriguez and Travis Rosen and like Casey Catanzaro. Like you get to kind of follow their stories as they've kind of become these celebrities. But I love being in that, you know, me and you, we talked about it on high school when it was like not that many people were watching it back then. It was just this niche thing. And I'm like, oh wait, you go on the obstacles? Like, no way. That like, and then we could just nerd out about it. And like we watched all these people on this niche, like not many people watching it show become these superstars, like Jesse Graff and Meagan Martin. And like it's kind of fun to see them grow up and went on the course.
My favorite thing is people's like, "Oh, is that kind of like Wipeout?" And I'm like, "You know, kinda."
I hate when people compare it because it's like Wipeout, you want everybody to lose. Like the fun part's the slapstick. But like with Ninja Warrior, you don't want them to fall. Like rare is the person that comes on there where you're like, yeah, I don't really like you. You know, they do a great job of getting you behind like almost every person who comes to the start line. So you want to see him finish.
Yeah, that was the strangest thing about watching one of the productions is you hardly ever hear Matt and Akbar commentating, because they're usually just
Really?
commentating up their booth. So it's all quiet when people are running the course, and it just feels just weird.
Is the crowd involved, or like I'm really curious to know, do they add that in later, like all the crowd sounds and commentary, or is it as exciting as it seems like when you're watching on TV?
So it's kind of a mixture of the two. They do have the crowd kind of have like pump up B-roll where they have us all like feels like Shrek where they're holding the sign for the wedding, like applause, freak
Yes.
out, oh no. And then some of them are genuine, like genuine reactions. I had some friends who came out and were supporting my shirt and came out and supported me when I competed in Denver. And forgetting the ninja's name. The one who had the corn dog all the time.
Oh, Jake Murray.
Jake Murray, yeah. So for his run, he did something crazy, and it's just them freaking out in my clapping and just cheering and just wearing my shirt. And I use that clip for every year that he competed as like his pump up clip.
That's awesome. See, famous by proxy
Exactly.
with the corn dog guy.
Yep. Man, Phil, Jake Murray, if you're watching this, sorry I forgot your name, and thank you for helping me find the Tacoma Dome all those years ago.
It's so cool that you know them. Like, to me, they're just like these icons that like I watch on TV, but you're like, oh yeah, like I could call Ryan Strandis anytime. Jake Murray, help me find the course. It's like, just so casually, like, it's just such a cool like community that they have, you know?
That was honestly, now that you mention it, that's my favorite thing. It's not all of us against each other, like other sporting events. It's all of us against the course. I had one of my students come to a competition that Isaac Caldeiro was at.
Mm-hmm.
So the first winner, and she was really nervous. She's like, oh, I want to go say hi to him, but I don't want to like bother him. And I was like, oh, let's just go say hi. And she wouldn't, like, she didn't want to bother him, just kept sitting down. So I just walked over to Isaac. I was like, hey Isaac, how you doing? Caught up for a little bit, and I was like, hey, you got a fan over there, and it'd probably make her life if you said hi. And he just got up, went over and talked to her. He's like, hey, what's your name, how are you doing?
That's what's so cool about it. It's, to me, the show, it's like, it's all about like overcoming obstacles, you know, and everybody's like in it together to do that. So, and that's what was exciting, I think, because I didn't really get a taste of that community until I found out that you watched it back in high school. And like back then it was like, you had the 21-year-old limit, you know, you couldn't compete till you're 21. So we were just like, okay, here's the pact. We're gonna, if you really want to compete, if you're training every day, then let's make your video when you turn 21 and we'll get you on the show next time. So, but I'm really happy that, like, you know, looking back all these years later, we were able to do that.
I think it's crazy, even taking a step back from the videos and getting on the show, is that you and I both were course testers. We got to go walk onto the course yes. and see what it was
like. I still remember getting your call. It was like the night before, and you're like, hey, there's this, I know we're only 20 years old, but there's this thing where we can still go on the course. You know, we won't compete, but we get to be on the obstacles. And it was like an hour away at Universal in Orlando. I still remember that. I always appreciated that call, because that was a trip. It was cool to see it in person. And it was, I remember it was like the Universal back lot. You got go in through the back lot, but then it was right by the mummy ride. So like,
yeah,
regular park hours are going on. It's like middle of the afternoon, like early or late morning, early afternoon. And like, oh, and I'm like, yeah, I'm doing that one. And then like each one after that, I just chickened out. But if I went back, I would definitely have tried at least one of those things, even if I fell in the water, which would have been great because it was June in Orlando. It would have been nice to dunk in the cold water.
I remember that water, and it's only like 2-3 feet deep. So you're falling for like 10, 15 feet. And I remember my butt hit the bottom and my head was still above water. I was like, this is not quite what I signed up for.
That's just that safe.
Enough to keep you from dying or getting seriously injured.
Yeah, but that was definitely a cool experience, though. I think you really get humbled when you step in front of the course and you see, like, you know, it seems intimidating on TV, but it's even more so like when you're there and when you're standing like in front at the edge of the water and you just see this 30-foot whatever contraption in front of you, and you're like, okay, this is why people fall on the course. It's that intimidating.
I remember, because I only got to try two obstacles. It was the tires, where you kind of go underneath them and grab the next one and just keep going through. Mm-hmm. And while I was up there, the producers were giving me different rules. They're like, you can't go back and swing. You have to just be able to reach it. And it was something like 7 feet apart. So I was like, yeah, no, just remember shaking my head to them. I'm like, this is not going to work with these rules.
And that's the whole point of course testing, is to like, kind of finagle it and see, you know, if we put these closer together, do people die? Mm-hmm. No, they survived. Okay, we'll keep going. You know, we're the fodder. And I remember you did the salmon ladder too. You did like the big salmon ladder. Like, you tried to go up as high as you could, and like everybody stopped for that. Like all the park people, like hundreds of people were watching you do this. Like they've been watching through the day, but everybody really stopped when we got to the salmon ladder, and we could hear like, and like one or two of the actual ninjas are like incognito in hoodies. Like,
yeah, we had you were Drew and a couple and Rico and a couple are there.
And they're all like, they're like Assassin's Creed guys, like trying to pretend they're not who they are. And they're watching and they're taking notes, and like they start calling out to you. They're like, "Kip up, knees," you know, and you're trying to get higher. And like you got pretty high, because that's why everybody started to notice you. Everybody looks up and they just see the skinny guy like shooting up the runs.
I remember we were sitting there and just watching. They kept calling all these big buff jacked guys that were just falling left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And Rico walked over or walked up to the production dude, was like, hey, you know, that kid over there, he built one in his backyard. He can do it. And so no, I walked over and we were like, can you do this? I was like, well, I built one. I sure hope so. He's like, yeah, get up here.
Otherwise, it was a waste of all the hard work in the backyard. I remember your salmon ladder. That is the only, I think that's the only time I ever attempted the salmon ladder is at your place. It was really hard. You guys built a really tough one.
Man, that thing, we built it to be hurricane proof. So it would sway back and forth.
You made it ninja proof.
It was sketch. Like, we affectionately called it the sketch ladder. It was just well built, but felt very poorly built in a backyard course for sure.
But that's the charm. That's the charm of the backyard ninja course, is that everything's held together by like duct tape and a couple nails.
Had to be hidden behind the hedges so the HOA and Fishhawk wouldn't get upset about it.
I always wondered about that position. That makes sense. Because it was really like, you wouldn't know it when you walked up to the house, but I'll still pass by your old house when I go visit family, because it's like right down the street and it's like on my running path. And I'll just look in that spot where I know there was once a salmon ladder like dominating the skyline.
Oh, good times. And well, I guess back to the more the interview process and like the submission video. So can you take us through the process and drafting interview questions, filming the submission video?
Yeah. So I remember being really excited to do your submission video just to like put it on the show. And I remember looking at like other people's submissions and seeing they're mostly done on a phone. So even though I didn't really have the best equipment, I'm like, you know what? I have a working camera and I know how to hold it without shaking it. So I think we'll be okay. But the whole drafting process, it was really, it was very similar to what I was already doing in school. I was in the media production program. And what we would do is we basically, the school paid for our equipment and we used the equipment to help promote the school. So like their sports teams, athletics, we would do features on athletes. So similar, exactly what you see on Ninja Warrior right before they go up, exactly what you see in the submission videos, a 2 to 3 minute feature telling the story of the athlete, like whatever story needs to be told, like how they joined the team or talking about the big game, or maybe it's a feature on the entire team, whatever it was. But it was, we learned how to kind of be really concise, and it was all about identifying what was the core thread of the story and building on that through interview and then with the B-roll that you get as well. So for you, I remember the plan was just, you know, I already, you know, I know you, so it was a little easier, but we still had to sit down and kind of talk and say like, okay, what is your story here? You know, I had bits and pieces about your experience with I knew it was going to be about C. diff, you know, more or less, but then getting all the other pieces, you know, what happened with the family and what happened with this. And so I knew at its core, like the producers want even more than just good ninjas, which are, I wouldn't say a dime a dozen. It's hard to be a good ninja, but like they get plenty of videos with plenty of people doing salmon ladders. So just doing all the obstacles isn't enough. They want that story that's going to hook people onto the show and hopefully get you airtime. So I knew C. diff was going to be that story. So it was really digging deeper into that experience. And I was really gung-ho about doing it, not just because it was a promise and because, you know, we're both Ninja Warrior fans, but I knew even if you found other people with better equipment or better whatever, it was like, I knew how to tell the story a little bit better, I felt, just because I am like a pediatric cancer survivor. So I'm like, I know that story firsthand. I know there's certain questions to ask that maybe other people wouldn't. Like everybody just says, oh, wow, you conquered it. It's done. And it's like, well, no, it's not. Your life changes forever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't just, it's not like you just go back to normal, you know, everything.
It's hard to explain that.
Exactly. It's like you broke Humpty Dumpty, you put him back together. It doesn't mean he has to be weaker. He could be stronger, but you carry that sort of experience with you. So now you're hopefully a little more humbled. And I knew that was the case in your sense, you know, it's easy to go onto that show and be cocky and then fall on the lights on the first obstacle, you know, that's another thing.
My greatest fear was to fall on the first obstacle.
You made it to number two though. You made it to number two. And that was the thing, is that like, you know, I knew I was talking to somebody who's really humbled even before it happened, you know, so after it was just even more about, I think appreciating what your body went through too. Because physically, I mean, when you go through something like that, you can't even move. Like it's hard to even describe trying to wake up in the morning when you feel like that. But then you start coming back and you set these little micro goals, you know, okay, I'm just going to walk across the hall today and I'm going to do 2 laps around the hall. And then, you know, you get out of the hospital. It's like, okay, now I'm going to go for like a walk around the block and then I'm going to go for a jog. And just like relearning how to walk, you know, learning how to run at baby steps. And then suddenly you're at even better physical shape than you were before. because you took all the steps and you, I think, appreciated more what your body could do now that it had been taken away from you, you know? So I was trying to dig into that story, and I think we succeeded because we got you on the show, but
you know, that was, it was honestly, I, for everyone watching, to quote my mother, I don't think there is another person who could have captured my life in such a positive, transformative way than you did in 2.5 minutes in that submission video, Walsh. It was, it took just you and I felt like we were just having a regular conversation, and you turned into something that could be on national television, which I thought was just really cool. And just, I wish I had that creative talent.
Oh, Taylor, getting me all choked up. I didn't know your mom thought that. That means a lot, man. And I think, and it's funny because technical quality wise, I mean, there were cicadas screaming in the background. We filmed it outside. It was on my handy cam, which is not the best camera, but like, that interview, no, I remember that setting up and it, right across from your salmon ladder, you know, and we, and it, I think being two friends really helped it too. You know, we could just talk and open up, and, it's something I had learned, in college. Cause it was, when I was working with Relay for Life, I tried making features for them. And so I had to talk to people about what was your experience either with cancer or with someone you love who had cancer. And it's like, it would usually be people I never like had met in my life. A handful of times it was, but a lot of times with people, it's just meeting for the first time. Some who would go on to like become friends and stuff, because you sit there and like, even if they don't have any experience in the camera, it's like, just look at me, talk to me. I started getting used to like asking those uncomfortable questions, but making people feel comfortable answering them. And it's, I don't know what the formula is. I think it's just listening and eye contact and, you know, nodding your head.
Yep.
But people, once you kind of ask them the question, because these are questions that, these are things they think about every day. You didn't just walk away from C. diff and, you know, you don't think about it anymore. It comes up all the time, probably. And for a lot of them, these, you know, whatever happened to them, whatever experience they had or person they lost, like they think about it every day, but nobody ever asks them. So then suddenly you're that person to ask them and they just open up. So Taylor, really, what I'm trying to circle back to is like, your story was always there. And it's like, just sitting in front of the camera, and once you could talk about it, once you put it out there, it's like putting it together was easy. Like that was the easiest feature I've ever done, because like the story was so juicy already. It didn't need finagling or anything. The only thing I had to learn was how to cut in, you know, find enough time, because there was so much to cover. Find enough time in there to throw in a little bit of your ninja training too, you know, like that is important. They do want to see a little bit of you on the obstacles, but again, it is that core story. And so I think, I mean, Taylor, you've got such a great story, and I really hope we can keep telling it on the show.
Thank you. And honestly, I didn't know you were a pediatric cancer survivor until that interview. I knew cancer affected you personally, I didn't know that.
I remember that. I held on to that like piece of information until we were in the interview. Oh, I was crafty back then.
You were. It was like tugging on my heartstrings too. I was like, wait, what?
Plot twist. I remember that. Yeah. Oh man, that was honestly, that's still to me one of my favorite projects. Again, technical quality, not the best, but in terms of story quality, it was the story that needed to be told. I'm really glad that your family felt that way too.
Thank you. Yeah, I remember watching it. I was compared to the season 9 and season 10 submission videos we made, and the production quality of 10 was a lot better, a lot less cicadas.
Yes, we learned a lot.
But the story in 9 was just so impactful that you told. I think it just goes to show, while NBC is this massive, or American Ninja Warrior with NBC is this massive multi-million dollar production, to get on the show, you could film it with a shaky camera and a couple of dudes just talking, and they're really just looking for the story. They're not looking for you to spend copious amounts of money and time making a Hollywood feature level production. They just want to know, like, what's your background? What's your story? Why do you want to do this?
Absolutely. They have all the great equipment there to refilm it, reshoot it and stuff. That's why they even tell you, don't put music on it in the background, because we might pull audio sound bites from it. But they have everything there to do it on the technical level. But I love what you're saying, because it really goes back to the thing that gets people in the seat. Whether it's in the movie theater, switching the channel on the TV or on streaming or whatever, to pick up a book, anything. There has to be something that connects you to it. And all the money that you throw at it in the world will not emotionally grab people. We go to experience stories because we want to feel something. We want to experience something. They say it's an escape. And I think in some ways, yeah, it is, but it's really more than that. You want to come out like, I mean, how many times do people tell you, oh my gosh, I cried in that movie. It was the best movie ever. It's like, those two things should not go together. If it made you give you the negative emotion, you shouldn't want to do it. You shouldn't want to throw that on everybody else around you. But it's like in our culture, when a story like makes you cry, makes you laugh, makes you like excited and like jumping out of your seat, these are all positive things, you know? Just the fact that it made you feel something. The worst review you can give to a movie is, I didn't feel anything. I don't remember it, you know? So to me, it's like, I think that's when I knew I wanted to be a writer too, was when I realized I was surrounded by people who were really talented at editing and production. They loved all the different cameras and lenses and ways you can go about filming it. But I didn't really care how you filmed it. Like you said, it could be shaky on a cell phone camera. I don't care. You know, I care about the story being told, you know, and however you present it, like, it's just about getting to the core of the story. And it would have been a disservice to you to fill your story with all this fluff about, like, you know, and here's, you know, a tour of our house with the family, and here's all this and that, and like, and put all this fluff in there that like nobody, I hate when those features come on American Ninja Warrior. I'm like, that's not what I'm here for. I'm here for like, what drives this person to come on this course that is so impossible, you know, what is making this person want to do the impossible? That's the story I want to hear. And I think that's the story that, and NBC knows it. That's the story their audiences want to hear. That's the story their producers want to hear and put them on the show, you know?
Exactly. And I think it's crazy. Back when there was a walk-on line, I don't know if you remember Michael Stanger, his wife Adina was in the wheelchair.
I don't remember Michael, but I do remember the, I remember the walk-in line, but walk me through it.
Yeah, so he was waiting in the walk-on line, and I believe it was Denver. It was like the end of the night, and everyone in the walk-on line came up to the producers like, you have to let this guy go. He's been here for 20 something days. His wife's in a wheelchair. Like, this is their dream. You've got to just let him compete. And he ended up clearing it and going to the national, doing really well in the city finals. And they ended up interviewing him after he competed. And they're like, why do you do this? Or how did you train? He's like, well, honestly, I was not in shape. And then my wife's health started failing and she lost the ability to walk, and I had to pick her up and downstairs, and realized if I was going to be the husband I wanted to be, I had to get my life in order. So we built a course for Ninja Warrior, and that's how I was able to help my wife.
See, didn't you just feel something there when you were telling that story? That's what the producers probably, you know, those guys at the walk-on line felt it. They go up to the producers or the people running the line, just like, this is the story, you know? And they're like, yeah, bring him in. Let's throw him on. That's incredible. And that, I mean, that really goes to show what the show is about. It's about overcoming obstacles. And I always, no matter what I'm writing, whether it's fiction or real life stories, I always want to look for, because people, like, I don't know, I hear a lot of this when I'm in writing groups and stuff, like they want to dissect everything you write a little too much. And they do, it's done in good faith, but let's say you have this character you wrote, it's fictional. And everybody wants to know, well, what's his favorite color? Where does she like to go after work? What do they do? I won't use the language. I could not care less about any of those things. It's irrelevant to the story. What matters with any character you present, whether real or fictional, whoever story you're trying to tell, what matters, it's what's motivating them and what's in their way. Mm-hmm. And if you can establish A and B, everybody's hooked, because no matter what you have gone through in your life, there is something motivating you and there's something in your way, and you will relate to those two things when you see that other person on TV. Exactly.
And Walsh, I just realized I did you a terrible disservice in not introducing you as a published author of the Trouble of the Floating City series.
So I figured at some point we could plug it. It didn't matter where. But yeah, so, after doing, and even I think during doing some of your submission videos, is when I started just balls to the wall writing.
Yeah, how did you get into that, and how is telling a story visually through video and film different or influenced your ability to tell a story in writing?
Ooh, that's a great question. So I'll briefly give you like what led me to be a writer, and then that'll kind of help me explain the second part of your question. So the path that got me to being a writer was literally being in those production classes and I had always been writing, but it was writing for the intent of putting it on the screen. You know, it was like, okay, I have a camera, but I don't really have, you know, don't have VFX artists to like pay, you know, I can't pay them to go and create these ideas in my head. But let me write them down. And maybe one day, like I could put it out there, you know, or at least it's some practice to kind of get me to that point where hopefully I could write something good enough to get produced. So it was always the intention of being a filmmaker, being the next Spielberg or something like that. But in my production classes, I was really surprised to find out how many people there really wanted to just be on the editing or the set part of production, not in the pre-production. And it became apparent when we had one writing class we had to take in our second semester. And I'm telling everybody at the end of the first semester, like, oh man, I can't wait for this writing class. I'm so excited. And they're all like, oh no, I don't want to go in that class. It's going to suck. You know, I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, writing's our least favorite part. And I found out I was like the only one in the class that liked writing. Worse, the teacher called me out on being a good writer to the rest of the class. And then all the rest of my classmates started sending me material that they were going to submit for a grade. But it flattered me, and it made me realize like that was my niche. And that's what they tell you if you ever do film school or anything, that you'll find your place, whether it's costume design, directing, acting, whatever it is, you'll kind of find it as you go. And I realized like writing was kind of for me. And so in the background, while I was doing that, I was writing these scripts for this like sci-fi fantasy story. I want to do like superheroes, but I don't know, there were so many superhero things already coming out. And I think right around the time Guardians of the Galaxy was coming out, I was like, you know what? By the time I'm ever like, if I'm ever in Hollywood, I've made it, you know, by that time that happens, like they have used like every comic book property. And I'm not, you know, 8 years later or so, I'm not wrong. They've used like pretty much every character I know in the Marvel and DC canon.
And then some.
I'm learning so many new characters all the time. And so I figured, let me just make up my own ensemble cast. Like, who are these characters? How do they meet? And I was writing these scripts. Mm-hmm. And it got so big. It was loosely a little bit inspired by Star Trek, just the idea of like having a crew, a team at the core, and like getting to know their relationships, their personalities. And so eventually that became, I said to myself, you know what? This is getting so big. I don't even think anybody would ever want to produce this for the amount of money it would cost to make. And it would probably be too long. It would be too long for a film and too elaborate for a TV show. Let me just put this in a book. Because if I put it in a book, then, you know, some things I have to learn about actually writing a book, but I could then, it would be mine, you know, it wouldn't be something that I handed off to somebody else and they just go and change it. It's not the same anymore. I could kind of have a little bit more control over my product. And so I started writing as a book, and I started to learn that, yes, a lot of the storytelling elements do carry over. Because at the end of the day, at its core, and I realized no matter how big the book was, every scene, every chapter, every little bit is in the same formula as the 3-minute feature that we do for you with Ninja Warrior for your submission video. It's what is the character going after in this scene and what is getting in their way? And you do that for 50 scenes and the book ends. You just follow that formula, and really good writers do it really well. Like George R.R. Martin, he not only sets... And a couple others do this. David Mamet's the first one I heard this from, but when I read Game of Thrones, I see it in action chapter for chapter. It's start the scene late, end it early. So whenever you start a Game of Thrones chapter, almost everyone, you're thrown in the middle of some kind of conflict. And you're kind of playing catch up. And that's really exciting for the reader. Like, wait, what's going on? Why is this character doing this? Why are they here? You know, and then eventually
exactly you get caught. What I loved about Arrow is it felt like most episodes started in the middle of some sort of conflict. And then you're learning about what caused it years ago.
Yes. And that's why I love, and even in the book, I put a prologue. It's like a cold open. I love the cold opens that they use in TV shows, you know, because it's like, it sets the tone and it erases all the need for all this exposition. Exposition is the death of any writer. To just throw it in there. But if you can sprinkle it in through the action, through conflict, somebody explained to me once, exposition is ammunition. If you can make it a weapon that characters are like, the information is stuff that the characters are using in their argument and you know, they're hiding certain details and they're revealing certain things and they're interrogating certain questions. That's when it gets interesting. That's when you don't think about it as, oh, I'm just being thrown all this stuff for the sake of being thrown stuff. It feels like it's an actual good use of words on the page or runtime in the film, whatever medium you're experiencing the story through. So long story short, yeah. Even no matter what story you're telling, I think no matter what writing form you use or storytelling form you use, a lot of the structural elements stay the same. It's just longer. That's the only difference. and that becomes the challenge in itself. But at the end of the day, if you can focus your brain on what is my character after, who are they, what do they want, and what's in their way, then you can keep the story engaging, because at the end of the day, that's what's connecting your reader or your viewer to the story you're trying to tell, is that character's journey and their struggle.
Yes, I remember giving my dad the Trouble in the Floating City book. He read it before I did.
No way.
The little drafts that I read along, or had the privilege of reading along the way. When you're
the only one who called it a privilege. It was a slog for everybody else.
And gave it to my dad, and he read it in just a couple days, and he said, it's like, it took me a couple chapters to get connected with the characters, but once I did, I couldn't put the book down.
Hey, that's awesome. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. It's fun. And I think I learned a lot from that book too. And my hope is that with this sequel that I'm working on, hopefully to have it out in December, is that I'll be able to pick up the pace a lot faster. Cause I think he's absolutely right. It took, there's a lot of world to kind of learn, and a lot of, a lot of dynamics to kind of get the hang of. Some people connect with it more than others. I think younger people really connect with it because they're all kind of like kids, just being kids. Mm-hmm. But then a few chapters in, when they kind of realize they have to be adults now, that's when like it picks up. And so, but this book from the first chapter, you're like, oh crap, they still act like kids, but like the situations they're getting thrown, you're like, okay, that's pretty adult, you know?
They grow up a little quickly.
Yeah, they grow up a little quickly in this, you know? And I mean, that's the same with any Ninja Warrior story. It's like, what's that? It's your coming of age story. It's, what was that thing that kind of made you grow up faster? Any kid or young adult who's gone through an illness, it's like that grows you up pretty quick.
Yeah, I know I usually try to sprinkle it lightly with comedy and jokes here and there, but there's still times I remember, I'm like, man, what was that like? And just remembering each of those little struggles and each moment was just, like mm-hmm. you're saying, it was one little checkbox after another, just each little achievement you're doing, you're like, okay, this is how I'm going to get from point A, which is, for lack of better terms, near death, to mm-hmm. being better than I was before. I was actually watching a reel today about the best way to start a habit is to break it down to the first 2 minutes. And just do that. So if you wanted to work out, or if your goal is to write a book, it was just every day, do the first 2 minutes of that activity. So go into the gym and just scanning a pass and then leaving. Or like writing a book is just sitting down and type a sentence and be like, okay, I'm good for today. Let's keep going.
That's it. That was just day for day, the way to write a book. There was no magic formula. It was just sitting down at the computer or at your desk, at least if you're using a pen and paper, and just writing every day and being consistent about it. And everybody will say, you know, whether it's writing or whatever it is, everybody's got something they like want to do. It's like that wish list thing, you know, that like is kind of in their heart. And they'll tell you, oh, if only I had the time. And I think the most important lesson I learned along this journey was that nobody ever actually has the time. Yep. But you make time for the things that are important to you. You know, that's why, I mean, speak from experience here. That's why certain relationships fail. It's just like, they're not actually making the time for you. It's like, oh, I would help you, but, and it's like, no, I should be should be the most important thing. And if writing was your thing, then like, that should be the thing you're chunking out time for every day. And back in college, I had a chart on my wall with like the times for my classes. And I do miss that lifestyle, because once you got home from class, you kind of like, you weren't in work from 8 to 5 or whatever you work, you know, it was like, a kind of come in and out, take a nap or do whatever. So I would have certain times blocked off within that block schedule to be like, all right, that's my writing time. And I'm not going to act like I was super consistent with it in college. I was, 20, other things to do too, but it was a good sort of lean in for what I eventually do now, which is now my schedule is I work my full-time job from 8 to 5. I come home, or if it's a remote day like today, I'm at home. I have 3 hours from 5 to 8 where I can decompress, relax, do whatever I want to do. That's usually eat dinner, go to the gym, take a nap, go for a walk, call family, friends, whatever I want to do, watch a show on Netflix. that's the time to just relax and do fun things, like interview on a podcast, you know, hang out with my buddy Taylor. And then after the 8 o'clock mark, and obviously, I mean, we're actually at actual time, we're at 7:50, but we can go well past 8 o'clock. I don't care. But on a general day, from 8 o'clock until I go to sleep is my writing time. And mm-hmm. And I would recommend to anybody who wants to be a writer, give yourself more than an hour. A lot of times they're like, maybe if I just get an hour, and sure you can lean into it with an hour, but I usually find that like it takes a while to get into the groove of writing. Mm-hmm. So you need usually more than an hour. If you can give yourself two, preferably three, but at least two, if you can get two a day, you'll be in a good space. And the more you do it, the less that writer's block is going to come in, the easier it is to get in that groove. It's going to be just like riding a bicycle for you. And aside from the few times that maybe you're really written into a corner or something, you'll find yourself writing more and more every day, to where suddenly pages and word counts, and even keep track of your word counts at first. I used to do that. And that was fun for me because it let me know how much I could do. Before I was doing it, I was like, oh, I got to 500 words. I'm good. You know, wasn't thinking about how much I did. I'm like, I guess that was a couple pages, right? And I walked away. But then I started tracking. And then when I had a really good day where I got like 2000 words, I'm like, oh, I can do that in one sitting. I need to, you know, then suddenly the 500, 1000 words wasn't enough. I'm like, yeah, I could do better. And I would push and stick at it a little bit longer and get more out of my writing session. So I would say consistency and measurement, which is really the same for anything else you would ever do in your life, whether it's at work or your hobbies or other passions that you have. Like, it's just that consistency and that willingness to build and to grow.
You mentioning that reminded me of just kind of something happened with me recently. Is Amanda and I adopted a dog named Tulip.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Back in April, and she's the most energetic, sweet, lazy dog you will meet, which sounds like conflicting words. However, she'll come up to me, and she'll just, around my lunch break, she'll just come and she'll rest her head on my lap and just look at me and wag her tail. Mm-hmm. And she won't move until I say, hey, do you want to go for a run? And she will lose her mind and go run straight to the door and get me out there. So I've which has helped me be a lot more, like you're saying, consistent. So I'd having a training buddy or training partner, I've realized, has helped me a ton. Someone to keep me accountable.
That is awesome. I mean, that's the exact reason. I mean, that's really how you became a ninja, how anybody would become a ninja, is just that consistent training every day. And that's why when I would go to with you to like the obstacle course training places, like, and, you know, get completely like gassed out in like, you know, 30 minutes at the most, you know, yep. I just have like sore arms and like, you know, worked out muscles I've never worked before, and my grip is all ripped up. But I would say, like, okay, this requires like coming in like every day and doing this. Mm-hmm. That's how these guys are able to do that on the course, which is why I never did it, because I knew, I'm like, I have time for either this or writing, and I'm gonna do writing, you know. But Taylor's gonna do that, and I'll make his videos, and that way by proxy I can kind of be a part of the Ninja Warrior experience, you know.
So if anyone knows my story, it's because of you.
And I get to live vicariously through you and your ninja journey. So, but no, I mean, that is a perfect example, Ninja Warrior in general. But then it really does help people when they have like that coach, that buddy, like somebody to do it with, mm-hmm. or even a mentor, like if you have a mentor too, that's great. But even just a really energetic dog could be all the difference.
She knows every day without fail at noon, she is holistic energy and won't calm down until I go take her on her own. I'm like, all right. I wasn't planning running today, but I guess I am. Let's do it.
Yeah. And one of the hardest parts is when you feel like you're doing it all alone, you know, when mm-hmm. you're training alone, you're practicing alone, whatever it is, instrument, you know, art, physical training. If you're doing it on your own, you don't feel like anyone's really holding you accountable. It's not like you're at work and you have somebody to please. It's not like you're on a team and you have somebody to help. And that's why you get such a better workout when you're working on a team, you know, and you're being coached, because like they'll push you harder. And so it's hard to be that self-coach. So if you can find either a group, I usually, joining a writer's group helped me, because then every week we sit mm-hmm. down and we have stuff. So then it reminds me, it's the thing in the back of my head all week, like, oh crap, I better be working on this or I'm not going to have anything.
Hold you accountable. To show.
Yeah, they hold me accountable. And so like I write more because I have people to please, you know, and I have people who are, and supportive people specifically, not people who are just going to like use you for your talents, but people who genuinely like enjoy what you enjoy and like want to both succeed together. You know, if you can find that group, whatever it is, you know, whatever group for your hobby, for your passion, for whatever you're working on, that can really make the difference too.
Yeah, Yeah, I completely agree. I've just noticed, even just hanging out with my brother Noah last week, we went rock climbing and I went to the ninja gym. And probably 20 minutes into rock climbing, I was like, all right, I know I remember how to rock climb. My body is just toast right now. Look over at Noah and he's thinking the same thing. And we're like, okay, let's just do one more. 40 minutes later of keep saying, let's just do one more. Mm-hmm. We're doing twice as much as we would have done just on our own.
Exactly. If somebody, we used to do this on, I work a lot in marketing, and at my old job, my manager had this thing. She had us do this presentation to other people who were doing marketing around the company. And she had us take, it was like a jump rope. We took a jump rope, mm-hmm. and you laid it out on the floor and you laid it right in front of the person and said, jump over the rope. So it's like right in front of you. So you just kind of hop and you're done, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're like, if you just kind of set, you know, if you're just going to set your own goals and not really, you know, care where they are, you know, yes, you can jump over the jump rope. But if somebody tells you jump over it now and they scoot it way the heck down the stage, and then the person has to jump, and they made me jump because when they did this to me in practice, I was doing a little bit of Ninja Warrior training at the time, so I could actually make the jump, you know? So, but that's exactly it. It's like when somebody comes in and sets the bar a little bit higher. And I think that's one thing that helps us as people who, you know, survived an illness, and it doesn't have to be an illness, but just overcame something really difficult. Mm-hmm. You tap, my mother told me this once, it's like you tap into a strength you didn't know you had. And it's a strength every single person possesses. Every single person, no matter what your circumstances are, you have it. But you don't always know it. You don't always know how far you can be pushed. And nothing makes me sadder than when someone says to me, oh, I'm just not good enough. I just, you know, it's not for me. I won't do it. And if your goal in life isn't to really do that, then great, don't waste your time. But like,
yeah,
if you're just selling yourself short because you don't think you can do it, you couldn't be further from the truth. You absolutely can if you want to. And it just requires that consistency and that pushing yourself. And suddenly those impossible obstacles on American Ninja Warrior are completely possible.
Yeah, honestly, when we were talking about me being on Ninja Warrior in high school, I was a stick even before C. diff. Like, scrawny little...
You both were. Oh my God, we were the skinniest kids in class.
Scrawny little kid who was not that athletic. I could run, but that was about it. And I remember people saying, like, you want to do Ninja Warrior? Like, you don't have muscle mass. You can barely do a pull-up. How are you going to do that? And it was just... It was... I think my motto was hashtag pure will, no skill. When I first started...
It's the best motto for stubbornness I've ever heard in my life. But it worked. I mean, look at you now. I mean, you guys built a sand ladder in your backyard. You put in the time. You found ninja gyms that were like not too far away from where I live, but I would have never known they were there if you hadn't brought me.
Yeah, and they're like all over the place, like weeds, but they're not advertised well.
No, it's that community thing. It's like, it's such a great community. They don't really need to pay for advertising that much. It's just word of mouth between that community is enough to do it. But they do it because, and you see it on the show a lot, it turns a lot of people's lives around when they have this thing to work at every day and they start seeing results. And it's like, if you just give it the time and you start like enjoying those results, I feel like people could go a lot further than they think they can. Everybody tells me they want to write a book can write a book. And being the fact that, and somebody told me this early on, several people mentioned this that were established writers. If you even finish the book, you're in the top 95% of writers, because most of them never will. And that's unfortunately true. There's still a lot of people in the 5%, but I think there could be so many more. I think there's a lot of great stories out there that people just aren't telling, or they aren't confident enough in to finish it or to put it out there, you know? And my advice is put it out. Even if it's not perfect, like you don't have to go on to Ninja Warrior and be the perfect athlete. That's the point of Ninja Warrior. The point is to do better. And that's something I had to learn, was to let go of when I let go of the book, is I finally said, you know what? People are enjoying it. I could probably do it better. I know if I wait another year, I'd be a better writer in a year and I could write a better story than this. But this is the best I got right now. And I feel pretty good about it. So let's do it, you know? Yep. And now I'm learning to really move even faster and try to let these books go faster, because that's the business model you have to have as an author, especially a self-published author. But you have to really churn them out. So, and I'm sitting on just one book in 2 years. I need to get the second book going, yep. You know? So I set myself a deadline. It's like, nobody set this for me. I've just said, you know what, December, it's gotta be done. Like, mm-hmm. you know, love it or hate it, it's gotta be done. And I realized, while I definitely want like the best quality product I can make, I can't sit on it and just, you know, expect it to just keep getting better on its own, or that, you know, by spending an extra month on it, it'll magically all the things will be perfect in it. You know, that won't happen. Mm-hmm. So it's just working hard enough to make it the best I can, and then saying, okay, kick it out of the nest, move on to the next one. And if you could be willing to stumble and fall a little bit and just try it, you know, I learned so much more from just getting my first book out there than I would have if I just sat there trying to query agents and trying to perfect it even more and stuff. It's just get it out there, because what's going to happen is you're going to have more ideas. You're going to have more stories. You're going to keep going. Like, this is not going to be your Mona Lisa. This is not be the magnum opus that defines your career. Yep. Especially if you're like us in our 20s, it's like, we will keep going as athletes. Okay. Maybe the window is slightly closing for you.
Yeah. It's like, I'm hoping it's like 35.
I think so. It drives me nuts. Okay. This drives me nuts on the show that now they have the teenagers on it. Suddenly everybody in their early 30s is considered old. Used to be, if you're old on that show, it's because you were in your 50s, you know?
Yeah.
So then you were actually kind of old, you know, at least for athletics, but 30 is a perfectly fine age. Tom Brady is still QBing and is like, I think he's even in his mid 40s now. I think like 40.
I want to say so. Yeah.
He's doing fine. You know, he even like gave up on the retirement next year. He's having so much fun out there. So like, you are not at 32. You are not an old athlete. That bothered me. I was like, man, Eisen, you need to stop.
I agree. Even just working out with Noah, like my recovery time is a lot longer than it was five, mm-hmm. 6 years ago,
mm-hmm.
but my energy level still feels like significantly better, if not the same as when I was a teenager.
Yeah. My roommate's an engineer, and he explained to me the science of like how it kind of degrades over time. I forget how it works, but like, mm-hmm. I know I'm not quite going to be at the peak. I could have been at like 22, 23, but I'm still well within, like, you know, I can still build exactly the same muscle. I can still, you know, I can still perfect the exact same skills. Physically, I can be just as good as I was at 22. But yeah, like you said, I think it's kind of that recovery time and some of the endurance may start to fade a little bit, but we're not nearly at a point yet. You know, I'll do a rosary here. It's no injuries. Yeah,
seriously,
we're fine. You know, to keep like going on obstacle courses and keep going to the gym and keep, you know, living a more athletic lifestyle. But then you know, for people writing, to kind of, I guess, to bring it back to that, it's like, if you're in your 20s, like, just throw it out there. Like, again, it's not going to be your best work. Your best work is on the horizon. Anybody who wants to write specifically or just wants to follow a dream, watch that movie on Netflix called Tick, Tick, Boom. Lin-Manuel mm-hmm. Miranda directed it. Andrew Garfield's in it. It's about the guy who wrote Rent, but mm-hmm. the genius of that movie, it has nothing to do with him writing Rent. It is him writing the story before it that doesn't really, well, I don't want to spoil too much, but it's not Rent, you know?
Yeah.
So if that kind of explains like where it's going, but that was the idea. That's the message behind the story, is that it's okay to try and fail, or if you can't even look at it as a failure by the end of it. It wasn't quite a failure. It was just a stepping stone to the thing he was meant to do, you know? And if you can view your failures, your missteps, the things that didn't go quite according to plan, as just steps to get you to a better place that you may not even have expected, that's the best place to be.
Seriously, I have actually had the opportunity to tell some friends who competed this season who fell in the second officer. I'm like, you are in really, really good company. You mm-hmm. wouldn't believe how many veterans or stars of the show have fallen on the second or third obstacle. Like, it's almost that failure or shortcoming that is lights a fire under yourself. You're like, okay, this is not my best work, my best effort, but I know where I can be and I want to get there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing you could do is let it get in your head, you know? You can't come back to obstacle two the next year, obstacle three, and say, this is where I fell. You gotta say, I'm just gonna focus like I should every time I attempt every obstacle. I'm gonna get through it. I'm trying to think, who was it this season? Barclay Stockett, first obstacle in Vegas, goes out. She's one of my favorites. Don't you hate it when that happens? It's like, oh, your favorite veterans, the ones who go on to be like superstars, and you know they're capable of so much. And I think that's what hurts, is when they know they can go farther, you know.
And Jeff Breton, I think it was three steps on the season after he won it all, three steps in Vegas, and he went right off the course.
Mm-hmm. It just happens.
Yeah.
And that's, I think it's important to remember, it happens to everybody, like you said. So, you know, if you have a misstep, if you don't make it on the course that year, if if the thing you wrote you didn't really like on the reread, always come back.
Yep.
Always come back. Taylor, any other questions for me?
Yeah,
I've got... been drilling.
We've been getting through most of them. I guess I've got two.
Okay.
What's your... The first one has two parts. So what is your favorite part and least favorite part of the writing process? And then the other question, just so you can have some time to think about it, is do you have any advice for aspiring ninjas that want to apply to the show? You're one of the few people I know that has created a video that's got someone on back-to-back seasons.
I wish I could put that on my resume. I should put that on my resume. I like that question a lot. For favorite and least favorite part is just, for me, and my writing style is very much this way, people have told me, it feels like a movie in your head. That's how I want to write my books. And when I'm sitting there writing it, even though it sounds like it's the most, like, to be somebody on the outside, like if you were to stay on the Zoom with me and watch me work for the next couple hours on my book, it'd be the most boring thing you'd ever see in your life. But for me, I'm in this other plane of existence where where the impossible is now possible. I'm literally on a different planet with different with people, characters. And a friend of mine told me I might need to see a therapist. I'm like, they're my friends. They have personalities. They speak with their own minds, you know. Sound like a crazy person saying this, and you've got me on record recording, you know, saying this. But my favorite part is escaping into whatever story I want to escape into. And it really should be, because if I'm not escaping into it, if I'm not having fun with it, nobody else is going to want to read it, you know? Yep. And it's going to take a couple passes to even get it to a point where people want to read it. But as long as at its core, there is some enjoyment, there's some emotion coming into it, it'll work. So that's my favorite part, is just the physical writing process when it clicks and I'm rolling through it. I can't quite think of a least favorite part. I guess it has to be the one that every writer would say. It's the writer's block. It's those moments where you write yourself into a hole and everything. But I found those are good moments too. And they come up less, don't be discouraged if you hit them, because they come up less and less if you get that routine going, because then you just get used to just writing through it, even if you just kind of BS it a little bit. You know, it's fine. Nobody else is going to read it yet. You could go back later and fix it. But sometimes you just have to chunk through. And there's different ways to go about it. But for me, I usually take a step back and just kind of what we talked about earlier, go back to that very fundamental, what does the character want? What's in their way? The character want what's in their way, because sometimes you forget what the character wants and you start thinking about what you want as the writer to happen in the story. And nothing is more obvious than when the puppet master is pulling all these strings. You start seeing all the ropes, you know.
Yep.
And instead of letting the characters organically tell the story. And I'm not sure how far you got in the story. I don't want to put too many spoilers for my book, but there are several moments, specifically cliffhangers,
yep,
that I did not expect to happen. And I get to a certain point in the story, I think everybody just come back. Give me 1 second to close the door.
You're good.
But there's several moments. Oh, thank you. But there's several moments in the book that I just did not expect to happen. I'm writing and I'm like, Junior, what did you do? And it's like he did it himself, you know? But those, so sometimes they end up becoming your favorite moments if you let them. So my least favorite, those, the brief periods where you really feel like you're stuck. But again, they're good moments to kind of sit back, reflect on your story or whatever you're trying to accomplish and rethink it. And then you end up honestly coming up with some of your best stuff when you're in a rut. So if you could spin it to a positive, which is something that survivors like us try to do, can serve yep. you well. So those would be my favorite, least favorite.
Reminds me of running a marathon. One of my own and then two official marathons. And every time I hit mile 18, 19 without fail. And I just remember thinking, I'm like, okay, this sucks. Why am I paying money for this experience? Like, why am I doing this? And I remember I'm like, well, the me that was on mile one or two would give their left leg to be on mile 18, 19 right now. I'm like, I just got to do this last little bit and just keep going. Like, eventually it'll be done. And I imagine that's kind of like writing a book is yes. when you hit a writer's block, you're like, okay.
It's exactly that. Without the tunnel vision, but it's exactly that, you know? And as somebody who ran track, I know the exact feeling of like, I need to get out of this like right now. Like, this is awful. And yeah, honestly, it's a similar feeling when you're writing. You're just like, I've come this far. What, and for what? You know, I wasted my time, I wasted my body, whatever it is, to get this far. And what helps me as a writer too is having those milestones of like, even when I don't quite know where the story is going, I have the certain beats that like I know are coming up, you know, like really big moments. Like that's what's got me excited to write this week, is I know I'm coming up on a really pivotal scene. And I'm like, once I like, I'm just so ready for that. Like there's like a betrayal and, you know, and like action and all these characters come together. And I'm like, I just know once I get there, it's gonna be so much fun. And that's helping me slug through some of the slower kind of setup pieces, you know, to get there. For sure. Now your other question was advice for, you said ninjas, I think.
Yeah. Do you have any inspiring or advice for aspiring ninjas and what they can do to get on the show? Like I mentioned before.
Yeah.
You are one of the few people I know that's gotten someone back to back.
It's, you know,
seasons.
Yeah. It's digging for that story. And as an example, anytime we worked on your stories, Taylor, it was always, I would call you first and we just do a catch up session for like an hour, you know, it'd just be us having a conversation kind of like this, but you know, I'd just be asking you kind of really, really basic questions like, you know, what's your brother up to? How are you in your training? Like, where's that going? Any new diseases we need to know about? Any new injuries, you know?
Unfortunately, that is a very valid question with my
luck. Unfortunately, but it makes for great television. And so that's the trick is digging through, because you're going to, I mean, there's a lot that happens either, you know, if it's your first time going on the show or if you're coming back for the next year, there's a lot that happens just in that year alone, you know, that you can talk about. So it's drilling through that. And I think looking for that thing that you say, this is really the defining thing. This is of all the things that happened this year or this in my life, this is that defining thing that connected me with this show. And specifically, it goes back to that formula. What did you want to do and what was in your way? And if you have that one moment where there was something really in your way for whatever it is you wanted to do, I would make that your story. Because you only get 3 minutes. So you won't be able to introduce all your family members. You won't be able to tell them what your favorite color is, but you can tell them what mattered to you and what you did to get over the obstacle that was in your way. And if you can just get those two things in a 3-minute video with a nice little bit of obstacle course footage thrown in there of you like dominating obstacles, that is the key. That's the formula. And doesn't matter what you film it on. It's just a matter of telling the story well.
Thank you, Walsh.
You're welcome, man. Thank you for having me on the show. This has been great. I really enjoyed this.
Just felt like we were catching up like old times.
Yeah, I forget that it's being recorded. So now that I remember it's being recorded, I will give my plug. My book is Trouble in the Floating City, available on Amazon. Sequel book coming out soon. I haven't announced the title or anything yet, but the plan is to have it out in December. So definitely be on the lookout for that on Amazon, available on Kindle Unlimited for free, all that good stuff. But thank you again, Taylor, for having me on the show today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for sharing crazy dreams with me and helping make some of my dreams a reality. Excited to support you along your journey as well.
I found friends who don't have crazy dreams are not very exciting friends. I like having friends who want to do the impossible, because that makes my life more fun.
Yeah, nothing more boring than being a bump on the log.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks again, Taylor. It's been awesome.
Oh, my pleasure. Take it easy, Walsh, and excited to proofread some of your drafts if you need a guinea pig for that.
Well, I will definitely send something by you. I've got some stuff probably in about 2 weeks. I'll be ready to get some feedback.
Good deal. Awesome. All right. Take it easy. Thanks again. And thank you, Nerdy Ninja Nation. Hope everyone has a great rest of your day. This is the shameless plug to like, comment, subscribe. Feel free to share. All right. Until next time. Take it easy. Bye.
Bye.